once again, and you're listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, a podcast that brings social media to enterprise IT. I'm John Troyer.
I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
And we're here again for an episode. We're going to be talking about social media, enterprise communication, and how the modern corporation talks to its stakeholders and talks to itself. Really pleased to have with us on the podcast our first guest on this podcast series, Chuck Hollis. Chuck Hollis is the global marketing CTO of EMC. And Chuck, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on.
Hey, it's a pleasure to help you guys kick this off. Looking forward to a great chat.
Well, great. Well, thanks, Chuck. At the Geek Whisperers, we started this podcast because we realized that over here in the enterprise IT space, we had something very special. We were doing social media and we were doing community, and we had really grown up a really interesting conversation between the companies and their stakeholders. I mean, this conversation's been going on for decades, but social media really supercharged it. And the social media industry in general, if they're not careful, has a tendency to start thinking of themselves as direct marketers or brand marketers. And while it's interesting what Fritos are doing and make money fast people are doing, we thought that social media in the enterprise space was doing something really interesting and really valuable, and something that, I mean, that's, you know, Matthew and Amy and I, that's kind of why we got into it, and we really are having fun in our jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting we brought up the Doritos. We've seen Taco Bell have fun by poking at Old Spice and vice versa. But there's something just unique about how the work and the life aspects of enterprise IT overlap, where people don't just use social to push an agenda. They're learning something that is critical to their job, mm-hmm. and there's that community aspect to it. Yeah. Everyone knows that you're connected to the EMC history on community. If they want to hear more, the Data Center Insiders had a great interview with you a few months back. But I want to hear, where are you seeing this today?
Yeah. Well, let me just start by reacting to John's first thought. I look at the phrase social media industry as an oxymoron. Oh, my God, this is human communication. We're doing it with better tools. The value is in the people doing the communicating, not with the people who are playing with the pipes. So anytime somebody brands themselves as a social media expert, my skepticism level just goes through the roof. That being said, it's a new communication medium. You can be annoying and vapid and banal in the real world. You can be annoying, vapid, and banal in the online world just as easily. If anything, it's magnified.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, my first warning of anybody who's getting involved in social media is, you know, be a good person with something to say and you'll do fine. And I tend to distance myself from which platform, which tools, you know, search engine optimization, all of that kind of riffraff stuff.
Sure.
The people that I tend to follow and the people who tend to follow me appreciate a quality perspective and a quality engagement. And as long as you make yourself kind of reasonably accessible, good things tend to happen, just like it does in the real world. I don't know. John, any thoughts on that?
So, Chuck, I'm going to jump in. This is Amy. I love your quotable there, be a good person with something to say, words to live by. How accessible would you advocate? So if you're giving somebody the, you know, top five tips, how accessible is accessible enough?
I don't know. I think that's a personal thing. And I work with a lot of executives who look at the social thing, you know, and different things. And it's kind of a personal agenda. You know, how much do you feel comfortable with? I've got my own boundaries of what I feel comfortable with and what I don't. I don't think there's a right. I think anytime you're more accessible than less accessible is generally a good thing, but there's some diminishing returns.
Hmm.
And I only think social media works when you're comfortable with it. You know, you're comfortable with the platform, the conversations, the people that hang with you. It's like a social situation. You don't like to land in social situations where you feel uncomfortable, right? And when you're comfortable, you do your best. You're a good person. You say good things. You interact, as a good person. So I don't really push people, but I do encourage them to try new things, new experiences. Does that make sense?
No, that's great. I would sort of follow on that and say, I love the analogy. How do you encourage people to get comfortable? So if you've got an executive you're sort of coaching, what do you say?
Okay, so here's where I get a little radical. So so many times this is pitched to executives as, oh, the world is going social. Every executive is blogging on Twitter. If you're going to be a good executive at your company, you have to go do this. It's the corporate mandate, right?
Sure.
Which is just about as much fun as doing your taxes or anything else, right? Oh, my gosh, I have to go do something else I don't like to go do. I've been far more successful when I position the opportunity as, this is good for you. This actually helps you.
That's great. I mean, and that's interesting to me because you took it from a personal aspect. Your Twitter handle is Chuck Hollis.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have been one of the spearheads of the @EMC brand.
No.
And that would have worked just fine. I mean, that was a choice you had. And I'm asked most often, like, well, do you feel like you're just self-evangelizing as opposed to benefiting the company with what you're doing and what you talk about?
Well, here's the win for me, and I'm very lucky. I work at a company. I believe in the company. I believe in the company values. I agree with most everything, but not everything the company does. So that Venn diagram of overlapping me as a person and EMC as a company, I'm very comfortable working in that space.
Good. Yeah.
If I wasn't comfortable working in that space, I kind of, question some of my career choices. And I consider that as an indicator that I'm at the right company, that I feel good enough about the company, that I can communicate and represent the company online. Does that make sense?
I kind of love that Venn diagram notion, that it's almost a litmus test for someone who says, I'm not sure where personal brand and corporate brand start and finish.
Yeah, I'd ask questions about where you're working and who you're working for if you don't feel that good about the place you're working for. And the best, sometimes people will label me a corporate blogger or sometimes worse. And I take it all in stride. I consider myself lucky. I work at a great company. There's a lot of good things to write about. It reflects my own personal interests and passions.
Sure.
No shortage of good ideas and good conversations. Why shouldn't I, right? As opposed to writing about my kittens or, something like that.
Yeah. Kittens do get a lot of hits on Twitter.
Yeah, I know.
Unrelatedly, I'm at the same company. Everyone should know that. I'm sitting in Chuck's office right now, awkwardly eye contact as we're bantering about this stuff. And I'm in the same position where we're talking about things I'm passionate about. I'm very thankful that my company is supportive of that. I know of plenty others that might slap people down for having the liberal perspective of just running with something and just making that idea public.
Yeah.
But it works here, and I think the personal aspect, if it's not going to be personal, you're right. It's like doing your taxes, which I would always prefer not to do.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I have to have a Twitter handle because marketing told me to. That's not an upside. So, I try to share with people, at least who are kind of directors and above, why should you care about this on a personal level? You guys want to talk about that for a bit?
Yeah. I want to stick with let's stick with the company for 1 second. More, Chuck. One of the fascinating aspects of this, this whole thing we've been involved in, is that the company has shifted from a communication model where everything went through one spigot, and that was PR, and that really was press relations rather than public relations often. To this place, place we're at, where I often think of the company as a sphere, an organism, a cell, and now there's lots of different pores and communication channels. I'm a biochemist by background.
So, I'm with you, man.
So I see it. And so a lot of our day jobs are spent with the parts of the cell. Amy and Matt and I, we're working with individual groups, programs, product teams, and how they communicate out to the world. What I really find interesting with what you've been doing, Chuck, is that you are an executive and you're part of the executive team and you've been speaking as an executive on social. And that's not – it's a slightly different perspective, and it's not that common. You really do act as a corporate spokesperson but with a personal hat, and we'll talk about – we've talked about that a little bit. Do you have any other – we've talked about – we're going to talk about the personal aspect, but I don't know. Has there been any sort of
– I'm sorry, John, but are you leaning into the idea of that the relationship with PR? Is that something that you're after in part of
it? Or other corporate functions in general?
Full disclosure, there's nobody at VMware, for instance, that has taken on the role that you have of being – informal public spokesperson with my own blog. And some executives have talked to me and they said, I want to generate a dialogue with our customers. And I'm like, well, then you've got to – well, then look at Chuck. He's really – I use you actually as an example as a lot, Chuck. I apologize.
I'm humbled. Thank you.
But you know, Chuck puts in the work. Look at his blog. Look at how many blog posts he writes. He's on a plane. He writes. He doesn't just jump in and say, now I would like to have a conversation. It's 2013. Talk to me. You know, you've been having a conversation.
Let me tell you all about it, right?
okay. So I don't know.
Let me just give you a little bit of history here. The way I started my blog is that it was, seven, 8 years ago, and the head of PR who sits close to me comes screaming into my office and saying, oh, my God, our competitors have started writing a blog. What shall we do? And I said, well, that's easy. We'll write one, too. And I bet we have more stuff to write about than they do because, you know, we're EMC. And he goes, oh, that's great. I'll set up the committees and the review process and the approval things to look at and scrutinize every word you write. And I said, no, wait. The oats will look much better before they go through the horse. Why don't you trust me? You put me in front of customers. You put me in front of Wall Street. You put me in front of all these other high-trust relationships.
Sure.
Let me go try to do what I do. It'll be a little rough at the beginning. And if I feel a little edgy and I'm getting into a soft area, I'll run it by you guys and see what you think. And, you know, the look of fear on the head of PR's face when I kind of gave him that, this is the deal, dude, he went with it. And over the time, you know, I look at my first kind of year and a half, they were terrible posts. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But over time, I kind of cracked the code about how to have a dialogue rather than just how to be a mouthpiece. And, you know, good personal journey for me, good journey for the company, because other people could say, hey, he's doing it. That doesn't look so bad. Maybe I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
But I think the consensus here is that our aggregated social force, blogging, Twitter, all of that, is probably a more effective and broader reach communication vehicle than issuing a press release to the wire service. And I think there's not a single PR professional here working here that would probably disagree with that statement. Now, of course, they have to pivot a bit to figure out how they add value in that new world.
Yeah.
But it's not a hard thing.
I can give an example of that. I was presenting yesterday mm-hmm. to a part of our division at EMC, and it was originally seen as a slight that they had to do a blog post as opposed mm-hmm. to sending out a traditional PR press mm-hmm. and having it go out to the wire. But as a result of the blog post and their engagement with the EMC Elect program, they created such buzz that it ended up proliferating into about 15 blog posts and getting retweeted and sent out. And
by the way, we all know that. We all see this stuff happen. So let me give you a second example. So for a couple of years, I've been the guy people in the company come to, hey, I want to get my story out. Can you write about what we're doing here? And, you know, most I do. Some is like, you know, sorry, man. but I encourage them to actually go off and say, hey, this is not so hard to do. It's zero cost. You can put in some effort, and you can be your own voice for the things you care about, all help, et cetera, et cetera. That worked in some cases, but it didn't really scale. So our head of marketing here, Jeremy Burton, came up with a brilliant idea. He basically fiated that said, below a certain level, there will be no more press releases, unless it's a really big press release.
Yeah.
So if you've got an average-sized thing, you've got to write a blog post, put it on this blog, we'll help you, and the blog's called EMC Pulse, which is a little bit of a carrot and stick to get more of a distributed function in the organization about getting either product or offer or service leads or somebody who's got something to say and wants to engage on that path of getting comfortable with writing stuff and putting it out there. So early days, but you know, I think the challenge we all would agree is that, you know, it's not hard to find a few good practitioners. How do you make it something that everybody does and gets better at, right? And I'm sure you've all been struggling like I have in my roles. How do you do that? But some new mechanisms are showing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, two questions from that. So do you think everybody should do it? And I think the number one question I get is the executives say, what if I say something on Twitter and accidentally change the stock price? So that fear, like you're talking about the trust relationships, what if they say too much in a more lively environment like Twitter?
You know, you say things in the real world and bad stuff happens. You say things in the online world and bad stuff happens. I think you just ought to go home and not say anything ever to anyone ever again. and I understand that feeling because the amplification and just the ricochet speed of stuff around the internet is amazing. But the attention span of most people who follow that stuff is about 0.3 seconds. You know, it comes, it flares up, and an hour they're chasing some other shiny thing across the horizon. So I think our executives here are pretty comfortable with the occasional downside. I occasionally have stepped in it.
Yeah,
a few times. sorry, I'll go make it better or try to. And that's kind of a little bit of the downside with the upside. But, you know, I would argue that anytime you engage with any audience, a person, et cetera, there's some probability that it won't quite go the way you thought. And I think you just take that thing and you magnify it a bunch in the social media. There's ways to ameliorate it. You know, use your community. What do you guys think? I'm thinking of saying this. What does everybody else think?
Right.
If it goes negative on you and you feel like you're being attacked, you know, get some buddies on board to kind of illuminate your side of the coin. I just look at it as a new skill set.
And it's, there's always that risk of, okay, what if I say something wrong? And I automatically flip that of, what if you don't say anything at all and you never get your message out there? Will you feel like you're doing your job?
But if I look at kind of how comfortable people are with all that now versus 6 or 7 years ago, maybe we come a long way.
I bet.
Yeah.
Well, Chuck, what about the time question? How much time do you put into this? And, you know, that's another pushback that I've gotten from senior level folks. I have to be on Twitter all the time. I have to blog.
Yeah. I get that too. And I'm like, it's the most efficient time you'll spend. How many meetings do you go to and say the same thing over and over again to different sets of people or the same set of people? How often do you have to get on an airplane and build relationships with people? You know, look at where you're spending your time and the communications that you're doing during those times. That doesn't shrink to zero, but if you invest time in the online world, you make more efficient use of your time. So one of my initial motivations for getting into this is I was tired of being on airplanes and being in meetings all day. If I could put my thoughts and my discussion online, push them, engage with people using a mechanism of their choice, the face-to-face time is far more effective.
Right. You don't have to repeat something because you know they already read that post.
And if they haven't,
they really cared.
And if you say something interesting when you meet them and they want more information, here's a couple of blog links. Boom.
Yeah. Right?
So I actually look at it as an efficiency give back, effective time management.
Huh. That's a little mind-blowing. That's the opposite of that where that argument tends to go.
Take the average mid- to senior-level executive. What do you spend your whole day doing?
Saying the same crap over and over.
I mean, okay, so occasionally you're working on a problem together and brainstorming. But if you look at the majority of your calendar, it is broadcasting messages, right?
At a strategic level, if you were sort of driving an initiative, and I love what you mentioned in terms of Jeremy Burton fiating in certain initiatives, would you advocate for spending the energy to get everybody on board and blogging, everybody participating, or would you advocate for highlighting some of the people who raised their hands?
The latter. I'm a big fan of social modeling. We kind of learn what's expected of us by watching what everybody else is doing. And I've been far more effective of introducing new behaviors into organizations by just doing some selective social modeling. Get a few volunteers, successful, and use them as a beacon for everybody else.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to people because shouldn't we all be marching ahead on this? But I've never had any success with that in any endeavor. Right? Find the thought leaders, find the brave, find the passionate, and make heroes out of them.
Yeah, we go to war with the army that we have, not the army we wish we have.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing. At least I've seen it in our own organization. You hit this critical mass where, what? You're not on Twitter? And it's kind of interesting how that critical mass kind of influences everybody else to get along.
Sure. It really pulls on the last little bits of inertia that are floating around.
The other kind of tangential discussion is, there's all these platforms. I should be on all of them. No, you shouldn't. Be on the ones that you feel comfortable with that kind of do the job for you. I'm not a LinkedIn fan. A lot of people are. Great. I'm not a Facebook fan. A lot of people are. Great. I'm pretty much a blog, RSS, Twitter kind of guy, and it works for me. So it's like asking people what restaurant should I go to. I don't know. You know, what works for you? That's the other kind of thing that people get into.
One thing that people outside our community, I don't know, may not realize is that it's really interesting talking to you, Chuck, but we don't actually chat a whole lot. We have over the years, but, you know, you're an executive here in our space. It's not really the church of Chuck, though. You're one voice among many.
Yeah.
You're a human being. And on the VMware side, you know, I'm probably one of the more prominent spokespeople, but, you know, I'm not an executive and it's certainly not the Church of John. We're all just folks that come together. And so I was kind of interested in when you had said, well, there's a personal benefit to it. And as you talk to other folks inside EMC and your own personal experience on this journey, shall we say, if we overuse the word. What have some of the benefits been like for you in participating in this?
Well, okay.
Giant, floating coffee house here.
Yeah, it's one thing to tell people you should do. It's another thing to say, look what I did, look what I got out of it, my own personal experience. Let me tell you how this might work for you. So for one thing, if you're going to be active socially online, you got to read a lot about what everybody's saying. All of a sudden, your brain bulges to this enormous size, and you are automatically the best informed person in the room on all sorts of topics. Some factual, some opinion. And you, just to kind of as a sufficiency thing, I'm sure you do guys do the same thing, you read a lot of stuff, right? You follow a lot of topics. Wow, the amount of intellectual input, you know, compare that with going to a structured curricula for 3 years as part of an MBA program. Interesting alternative, right? Another benefit, we all have a lot of great thoughts. The act of having to write them down clarifies them. So I end up being a lot more articulate face-to-face simply because I've gone through the refinement process of all these great ideas and thoughts. Oh, I put them on paper. Looks like word salad.
Yeah.
How do I kind of structure this in kind of a logical flow? And that actually reflects back and actually crispens up my own thinking. I think the third benefit is you meet people you wouldn't otherwise meet. And you get to control kind of the level of interaction. If they're interesting, you can engage deeply. If it's, you know, they're much more interested in you than you are in them, you can create a little distance. You get kind of an interesting way to meet thousands of people from around the globe that you wouldn't otherwise meet, who have very often very interesting things to say in their own unique perspectives. And finally, it's personal branding. I didn't intend to do it, but, you know, you're only as good as your brand. And you have a good social presence. People know who you are. People know what you do. Now, I don't like being described as that corporate blogger because, you know, who I am is a little separate than what I do. But I'll take it. At least they know who I am, and I'm not some faceless name on an org chart. And just go a little further than that, I do kind of career coaching for some folks, and the classic profile, somebody kind of mid-level in their career, they want to know how to step it up. And they say, well, I should go back to school and get my MBA. I'm like, yeah, you could do that. Or you could invest less time and less money to create a well-written professional blog and a social presence. And I think it would be debatable which one is worth it in the long run. By the way, you don't have to go to school. You'll probably end up just as being as intellectually acute as anybody who did. A different commodity. And I'm not saying you ought to do this over that, but in at least in our industry, in the way social is going so fast, a good social brand, a good personal brand is very monetizable. And you have to argue if you're going to invest in improving yourself and your career, well, we have this whole new avenue here called, you know, be a social branded, you know, guy or gal. Any reactions to any of that?
I love your list of what's in it for you. It's a great selling point. And one sort of question I'm always interested in, I know there is a lot of debate about, ongoing debate online about if someone essentially becomes too big for their social britches, if you will. So the idea that your personal brand does so outpace that your corporate brand or your corporate identity that you become unmanageable, unhirable. So what do you think about the concept of personal celebrity and people becoming too fat-headed to have a job?
Well, I would argue that happened before social media. I could see it. So I just think that's part of good personal mental hygiene, you know. Know where you are. Certainly, it's much more visible in the social world,
sure.
Is the attribute, but the same personality attributes have been around for centuries, right?
Yeah, I like the way you say it, Chuck. I heard you say this once and it stuck with me, that I just try to suck a little bit less every day.
Yep.
And I think that gets the point across really well, that, you know, all four of us are very plugged into what people are talking about. We're generally respected in our communities for knowing things. And still, like, I would always put that I humbly say there are plenty of people that know way more than me.
Yeah, and I think I remember saying that, you know, just try to suck a little less every day. you know, we're all people. We all make mistakes. Ours is just one opinion as the others. And I've never felt that I maybe okay. Maybe I have a swell-headed day once in a while, but I try to keep myself in check. Because again, you're only as good as your engagement with other people. And if you start acting that way, guess what happens?
Now I'm wondering, like from that brand perspective, Amy, that so the brand is getting concerned that you're overshadowing them. My instinct's to turn around and be like, what can we do with the brand to make sure it has more reach than an individual?
Well, let me stop you there. So
please.
Let me, my situation, the Venn diagram between what EMC is trying to do and who I am, you know, there's a lot of area for me to work on.
Sure.
I think the personal brand versus corporate brand issue shows up when that Venn diagram is small. And somebody feels that they have to go establish their own identity and their own persona and be completely separate. I just happen to be working here, right?
Okay.
And so that would be kind of at least my perspective. So when people come to me at EMC and say, hey, I want to do what you do, I usually somewhere in the comment, how do you feel about the company? How do you feel about your role in the company?
Yeah.
How do you feel about your career here? Because if they're checking those boxes and I feel good about this place, I'm saying, well, go for it. And if you're just looking at this as a tool to nail down your next MBO, probably the wrong motivation.
Well, no. So I love that exchange. And I guess my question would be, Chuck, is your instinct to would you encourage that person, if there was that mismatch, that misalignment, would you encourage them to try to change their company culture? Because maybe their company hadn't established that culture of new media like you found present in yours.
One lady said, this is like gardening. You need fertile soil, rain, and some good seeds. If the plants aren't growing, maybe you try somewhere else. And I think if we go back 5 or 6 years ago, there wasn't much fertile soil to do what we collectively do, right? Now there's plenty of it. And in the haves versus the have-nots, there's strong demand for people with social skills, social acumen, branded identities. I mean, I see that going on all the time. So if you feel very strongly about social and being proficient about social, plenty of places that would love to have you, and they would look at that as a valuable asset in addition to everything else you did.
Yeah, I do think folks do have to, like you said, know where you are, or remember who you – I forget how you put it, but you know there is your Venn diagram is overlapping a lot.
Yeah.
But as technologists, we get in there and we're having a technology conversation as well as a commercial conversation, and it is especially as people start off, I think it's important for people to remember where they are, not so that they censor themselves, but you can get yourself into it. If you're not thinking about what you're saying, you can kind of paint yourself into some awkward corners by either slamming the competition or either talking about the competition for good or bad. And we have seen some examples of that. It's usually not too serious. But
I used to be the worst offender of taking a particular competitor and just enjoying ripping into them. but I got feedback that people didn't really enjoy that.
No.
And, okay, maybe I thought it was fun, but my audience didn't. So I took the feedback. This is going back a couple of years. If I really care about my audience and kind of my, you know, and if I am honest with myself, don't do that. And I think that's a social skill, is the ability to solicit and take feedback and act on it, just like the real world.
Right.
Right? Then again, I mean, there's a fine line on the other side. John, you work for a technology company. Amy, you work for I do. We all work for technology companies. And very often, we get an insight into what's going on behind the scenes at our competitors that other people don't. And occasionally, I have this ping of guilt. It's like, oh, my God, nobody knows what they're really doing. Let me tell everybody, which obviously gets characterized as, oh, this is competitive. But so occasionally, I'm on the edge of feeling like I have to expose some interesting perspectives versus staying out of it. So I've gotten a lot better. I'm on rehab. I'm leaving a clean and sober life. But that's the only kind of twinge of regret that I have, that I really can't share everything simply because it comes across as being overly negative.
Yeah, sometimes it depends on who you are and what your role is as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jamie.
No, I had one more follow-on based on what you were talking about, sort of that idea of being a corporate bulldog, if you will, at first versus neutrality. Because another question we get a lot is, if you end up aligning your personal brand so much with a company, do you think it becomes difficult for you to have credibility if you change gears down the road? What would your coaching be in terms of what you came out and said?
That's a tough one to answer. but I haven't had to do it yet. I'm currently in the position that I think I could transition to some other role at some other company and not lose the brand, the personal brand.
Yeah.
Because, again, I tend to write about industry issues, customer interactions, a lot of EMC seasoning, right?
Yeah.
Take out the EMC-specific seasoning. It's still a lot of interesting perspectives and ideas and that sort of stuff in the content.
So I think it comes down to not being too much of a fanboy, just to use that term. I mean, you talk about the technology that's relevant to the conversation, but you don't have to lead with that all the time.
So I found this out. The only thing fanboys attract are other fanboys.
There's our quotable for the day. I'll be tweeting.
We're doing this, right? We're doing this to engage broader audiences. So if you edge over into fanboydom or fangirldom, they're both out there, that's the only audience you're going to find.
Yep.
And, you know, you're going to be stuck at a Twitter count of 52. And
Well, it's about being human. It's about being honest, being intellectually honest, being emotionally honest. You know, everybody knows that we're paid by companies to pursue our commercial interests.
It's right on my blog. There's no way you can read anything I write without understanding who I work for. But at the same time, I don't know if you guys have noticed this. We all follow the same people or people over time.
Yeah.
And they mature. Their perspectives change. And you can see them going through different phases about how they're approaching their interactions with others. And generally, it's in a positive direction. And it's, again, I always think of it as a journey. It's not a destination. You know, try to suck a little less every day.
Yeah.
And I see that in a lot of people's tweets and blog posts and stuff. They're kind of on their own little journey of realizing there's more to life than announcing my latest product.
Yeah, there's like a nice social morality that you establish by the community. It's very just basic human instinct and surrounding yourself with people. And now we just have a very different conduit to hear feedback when we're not meeting people's expectations.
So I'll show you one trick that I've learned. Maybe I'll share with the audience. We, because we work for technology companies, have very broad context about technologies, how they're consumed, patterns in the industry. If you're on the other side of that fence, this is all a mystery to you, right? Mm-hmm. So some of my most successful posts are, hey, let me just step back and let me tell you what's going on in the storage world. Let me tell you kind of at a high level what's going on in the security level, right, in the world, or big data analytics. Pick your favorite, you know, technology topic. And those end up being very popular posts simply because you're not talking as a vendor. You're talking about somebody in the industry who's trying to communicate interesting aspects of it to somebody who doesn't have your perspective. So I always think that's safe ground.
Yeah, and valuable, and as you say, it helps you crystallize your thinking too. I mean, that's a lot of the thinking around the VMware vExpert program and the EMC Elect program. Not that you're a super genius or not that you – it's not a technical certification program.
No.
But honestly, we figure that if you've been blogging regularly for a year, you actually have taught yourself something, and so then you're kind of a de facto expert.
Yeah, and if nothing else, you may not know where the answer is, but you certainly know where to get it, right?
You're a couple steps removed at most.
And that's what I see these programs doing is encouraging broader social proficiency on both sides of the fence, us and our customers and our partners.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the idea of social modeling versus I don't want to ever be in the business of forcing horses to drink water.
Oh, I've tried that.
Yeah, it does not work.
Yeah, they get angry and they're bigger than you and they have sharp hooves.
I believe that's called torture or animal abuse in your analogy.
But it's a natural human thing to say, well, I'm doing this, and it's obviously working so well. Everybody should be doing this. Well, that's not how human beings work.
Yeah.
Right?
Got to let ideas evolve into someone's own psyche, very Ben Franklin-ish.
But again, I'll circle back. I'm most effective in getting people on board when you kind of say, well, let me tell you what's in it for me personally. And they can relate to that.
Yep.
As opposed to... you know, another little short rant on the social media industry. I can't tell you how many statistical reports I've seen. And I look at them and say, oh, my God, this is completely meaningless. You know, we're sampling white noise, extracting patterns, and trying to establish meaning from space noise. It's more about who you are and who you're connecting with as opposed to numbers and metrics. And maybe in the consumer industry, that is probably a more reasonable thing to do. We're in a B2B world. Not only that, we're in the most intense part of B2B, which is high tech and the enterprise, right? And the quality of the engagements matter far more than the quantity. And I think we've done ourselves a disservice by importing a lot of B2C thinking into our space in terms of metrics. One good conversation is worth a thousand is more important than a thousand bad ones, right?
Huh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is going to dovetail nicely into a conversation about metrics.
Okay, Matt, go on with your metrics bad self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to jump into it yet. I'm just, you know, foreshadowing.
I'm with you. You know, we just finished up South by Southwest. I don't go to it. I get calls every day from social media vendors trying to sell me tools, and I haven't really. I'm burnt out. I haven't really found any of them that help me at all. So I just kind of ignore them at this point. I'm sure some will bubble to the top eventually. You know, I'd like a good social CRM that kind of lets us track who's talking to whom, but I don't know. It seems like a lot of overhead for what I do. I try not to scale that.
Yeah, there's no substitute for critical thinking. And, you know, the tools, at least as I've seen them misapplied, end up being a substitute for critical thinking. And once people just say, well, the numbers say this, therefore we should do that, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa here. Let's kind of go back to the beginning. What exactly are we measuring? Oh, we're measuring the output of a spam bot somebody wrote somewhere in Taiwan. Oh, interesting. I wonder how much stuff they got.
But it's retweeting everything you're saying. Therefore, it's an influencer.
Yeah, and look, Cloud thinks it's very influential. And blah, blah, blah. Wait.
Well, Chuck, where do you think we're going with all this? I don't know. In some ways, you know, this, if you look back 10 or 20 years, we were going to conferences, we were pressing the flesh, we were doing the same sort of, it's all about being humans. Enterprise, large technology sales are a lot about just being humans and trying to be solution selling, and you know, for decades. That's kind of what we're doing here. We're having a conversation. We're trying to influence people's thinking, get them to know us. I don't know. Where do you think we're all headed with all this?
You know, our business runs on powerful ideas, right? Certainly VMware, Cisco, and EMC. You know, our business is productizing very powerful ideas and concepts, right? Which means that you're broadcasting new thoughts and new ideas to your audiences and getting their reactions to them, right? It's kind of that give and take. And I just look at this as a much more efficient communication medium and set of tools. Like any tool in the universe, it could be used for good or it could be used for bad. You know, email was great until the spammers found it. And I'm going to date myself here, but I remember when people moved off acetate film and started using PowerPoint on PCs, we saw a lot of bad PowerPoint, right? You know, animation and cash registers ringing and all that kind of crap, right? Takes a while to figure out how to learn the new tools effectively, right? This is an interesting tool because in addition to it serving the purpose of communication, using it actually improves you and your game, and it makes you better. So I think it's a win-win here. I'm with you, John. Anybody who tries to make an industry out of just basic communication with people probably has, you know, a very thin margin to add some value these days. But, you know, I'll tell people this all the time. This is the new management track. This is the new leadership track. This is the new career track that didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, we all know how to scamper up the corporate ladder the old way. Here's a new way to do it. You know, are there some role models that are doing it? Yeah, I see them here at this company. We have some very influential leaders here who know how to write internal blogs and run online chat sessions. And not only they're not encouraging people to do it, they're leading by example. And I didn't see that 5 years ago. We're starting to see it now that it's kind of the new recipe for moving from the lower ranks to the higher ranks is you've got to have this tool set, right? You've got to know what this is all about. It is not a dedicated role. It's something you do, right?
It's something you not the VP of PowerPoint?
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to go somewhere, but I'm not going to go there.
But I love that. To that point, do you think that is – how do you think people are reacting to that? The VP of PowerPoint might have been a comfortable place. What kind of disruption do you see and predict? You know, do you see even more?
Oh, yeah. They're powerful tools. Learn how to use them well. You can do amazing things. And even if you're not proficient at the tools, better be aware that other people are, right? And, you know, plan accordingly. 15, 20 years ago, we all got to go to public speaking classes. Remember that? Giving effective presentations, right? All that sort of stuff. Still a useful skill, But in the social world, I've got to have that same engagement skill that I used to have standing up and talking to people face to face. I now have to bring that into the online domain. You know what the survey numbers say. You know, what's the number two fear everybody has is death. The number one fear is public speaking. Well, let's just update that for 2013.
Yeah.
The number one fear everybody has is getting out there in the social world and getting your, you know, getting spanked somehow.
Yeah.
It makes you very vulnerable. I mean, you're putting not only you're putting your words out there and leaving them out there to hang and see how people react. It makes traditional marketers who are used to three rounds of revision and on a product slick very uncomfortable.
Yes, but let's go back 10 years ago. You couldn't walk up the management ladder unless you were good at public speaking and communicating with people in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Same skill, different domain.
Let's not minimize that, though. You still need that skill set.
It doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. We just add to it.
I guess, right? Now I really date myself. I once was forced to take a class years ago on writing effective business letters. Right? I think there were typewriters involved.
were they faxed? That's the question.
Urban paper, baby. But all joking aside, you know, communication is a basic business skill. And, you know, there's a dividing line between the professionals and the people who just need it as part of their portfolio skills. I don't think of myself as a corporate blogger and a social media person. I think of myself as an executive here at EMC who's learned some new skills and is using them. And I think that differentiation is probably helpful to a lot of people. This is a skill set that you learn, like speaking a foreign language, like, right?
Well, how do you see, what are your predictions? So I love the concept of business disruption. How do you think it disrupts business? What do you think the impacts are socially? What do you forecast for us? You've seen a lot of this evolution. What do you think?
It gets better. It gets more transparent. It gets more liquid. It gets more honest. Things move faster. If you posit that the industry moves at the speed of communication, you know, people sharing ideas, internalizing ideas, and putting ideas into practice, the advent of social basically accelerates that. You don't have to wait 3 years to get a new perspective. You can get a new perspective in 3 minutes, right? And so what I've seen is that the organizations that have a preponderance of IT people who are socially savvy, they're moving faster than the guys who only go to a trade show once a year, right, and pick up brochures. So just getting back to our core audiences here, things move faster in a more transparent world. Ideas are created, validated, vetted, communicated, revised. I mean, it bakes so quick compared to just maybe 5 or 6 years ago, which is generally good for both producers and consumers of technology.
I love that. I don't know what you guys think of. What do you think about that in terms of the John and Matt, in terms of that being such a competitive edge? I love Chuck's perspective on that.
I love it, too. I think it puts my job in context that I might be working for a social media marketing team right now, but I've been talking, I expect within 1 to 2 years that our division should be common sense to people, or at least expected across the industry, so we have to grow into something that is, has more ownership and less management of the social enterprise at a company, because it's becoming a base skill. It's just another communication channel.
Oh, I got to tell you, there is one kind of negative thing. I want to get your reaction to it. Now, I'm not going to name names here, but I have met people who consider themselves very proficient at social media and basically show up in my office, you know, with a control agenda. Here's what we're doing. Here's how you're going to do it. Here's the process. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, if you want to coach
this. Does it include the prescribed tweet? This is a loaded question.
Yeah, the prescribed tweet. prescribed
That's
hashtag.
Cool term, prescribed
yeah,
tweet.
Here are the SEO terms you need to embed in every post.
Oh, God.
And I'm looking at them, and I'm going, oh, my God. We've just taken all the nonsense we had in the physical world, and we're trying to replicate that in the social world. Now, am I okay with a little team sport and a little coaching and a little collaboration on some better ways to do things? Absolutely. But this should not be a leverage position for somebody who's branded as a social media practitioner to hold court and tell other people what to do and how to do it. All the fun goes out of it really quick.
Yeah. That is a challenge as for practitioners, though, because it's a common challenge. they get sucked into that kind of a challenge. So what we've seen in our space, obviously, as an individual, if you're an IT practitioner, your career can be supercharged by this stuff. You're perceived as a thought leader. You have a platform to talk. You have some career value. You get hired by somebody if you can go whatever direction you want.
Yeah, you're immediately recognized as the smartest guy in the room, be it true or not, right?
Yeah. But then you get pulled into often a career path there as you're at a consulting company, a VAR or something, or a customer. You get sucked into one of the, a VMware or an EMC or whatever, some sort of vendor. And we've talked about, there's certain things then that you know that you probably are confidential. You can't talk about. You're busy. You know, unfortunately, the reason they hired you was because you were so you spent a lot of time building this communication platform, but now they send you out selling or something like that. So you get busy. But a third thing is this aspect of corporate control. What can I say? And sometimes it's self-censorship. Sometimes it's people coming in from the outside and saying, well, what can I talk about on my personal blog? Can I talk favorably about a competitor? You know, and usually those things get sorted out. I haven't heard too many horror stories, but certainly
Did you guys ever see the official EMC social media training video Len Devana did years ago with the caveman in the cartoon? You guys ever see that thing?
Yes, I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's basically 3 minutes of fun, and that is our corporate social media policy. There is no other document. There is no other, right? Watch this 3-minute video. We trust you to be good. Mistakes will happen. We expect you to take some coaching, right? Off we go. I think it starts with the default model that we presume that we want everybody in our company to be a good representative of our company, not just the professionals. Employee sat goes up, career satisfaction goes up. Let's go to the customer side a little bit. I'm gonna out somebody I'm very respectful of, StorageBod, also known as Martin Glassborough. And he very timidly started writing a blog from the customer side, years ago. And it was almost like, oh, is anybody gonna smack me down? You know, I gotta be real careful here. And over the years, he has, the level of his blogging, the insights, the sophistication, he has now turned into an industry voice in addition to his day job. I would argue that he's getting more job satisfaction. I can only assume that his employer thinks of that as a valuable thing. And unless you really know the guy, you wouldn't know where he works, what he does, any of that sort of stuff. I mean, you really have to know him well to understand what his work situation is like. But I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more loud, articulate customer voices standing up. John, to your credit, I think you have a lot of that in your VMware community. To Cisco's credit, I think you've got a lot of that in your community as well. We're starting to see it in our own community. I think of that as a good thing because it's not enough for us to just talk. We have to listen, right? And to the extent that people get better at telling us what we need to hear, that's just a good thing all around.
Well, Chuck, thanks for joining us. I think this has been a really fascinating conversation. I think we'll have to do it again sometime. If we could go on, we should probably have lunch or something and go on and go on for maybe with the recorder off. It might be an interesting conversation as well.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, I think it's an interesting topic, and, it's an interesting premise for this podcast.
Yeah.
Social media in our sector. My thought on it is, let's talk about it from a vendor perspective. But let's also hear about, the other side of it, the people on the other side of the fence who are consuming our products and our technologies and trying to make them all work to do good things.
Yeah. Well, the fun thing about our community, too, is that we actually, because we're all technology enthusiasts, we actually don't differentiate a lot as we're talking to each other. Who's a vendor? Who's a customer? Who's a partner? That kind of shocks some people internally sometimes. That, like, who does so-and-so work for? And I'm like, I think I know, but I don't really track that very much. We're all just coming together.
Yeah, eventually it becomes irrelevant, right?
Having a conversation.
Hey, guys, thanks for setting this up. I look forward to doing more with you, and best of luck.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Chuck. You can check out Chuck. Just Google Chuck Hollis. He's at chucksblog.emc.com and Chuck Hollis on Twitter. I'm sure he'd be happy if you said hi. Thanks a lot, Chuck.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.